Greetings, friends, and welcome to the Grog Pod Roguelike Podcast, where each episode we hack the planet, escape with some ratings numbers, and if the game siphons enough creds, revisit it in our end-of-season recap tournament. I am your lead black hat pen tester, Scott Berger, and with me are my leather trench coat-wearing cyber sleuth co-hosts.
Hello, I am a frowny face named Andrew Harshman.
And I'm Colin, the cyber sleuth, the hacker, the agent. I'm all of them. Could be anyone.
Wow. I guess I'm Will, and what am I? I'm a glitch, a debug thing. I don't know. Techno babble. That's what I am.
This week we are talking 868 Hack, released originally on iOS for mobile devices, I guess iPhone and tablet at the time, December 8th, 2012. Whopping almost coming up on 14 years ago, but getting its Steam release a few years afterwards, January 27th, 2015. This was developed and published by one Michael Bro, who is kind of a, what is it? I guess like the tagline is he's your favorite game dev's favorite game dev, as it were, who has a long list of games that he has solo dev'd and put up on his itch.io store or in places susceptible to link rot or what have you, but with a career spanning back since 2011, developing games. I'll just quickly breeze through some of these here because there's a lot of them. Vertex Dispenser, kind of like a math RTS. Compendium, which is like a collection of weird local multiplayer only games. You got Zaga 33, which is kind of like a mechanical precursor to 868 Hack. We got 868 Hack, followed by Corrupt, which is sort of like a very Michael Bro style Sokoban game. You got Vesper 5, which is it's a game that only allows you to make one move per 24-hour period. You have other games titled like Become a Great Artist in Just 10 Seconds. You got Helix. You got other rogue-ish games like Imbroglio, Cinco Paus, P1 Select, and coming fairly soon, I think later this year, 868-Back, sort of spiritual successor slash remake of this game, coming to Steam in hopefully later this year, 2016 or 2026. Jesus.
Nobody in the audience knows what any of those are, I'm guessing. Is that right? I mean,
I think people clicking in on this who are familiar with Michael Bro games from the early 2010s know what those are. Okay. And I actually got a gifted copy of Cinco Paus from the guy who created one of my all-time favorite ninja platformers, N++. That game is a wild, like, we'll get into it for this episode, but 868 Hack is like the most intelligible of his games to a general audience.
The most intelligible.
Hack, 868 Hack is the only one with its own Wikipedia article.
Oh, excellent. Well, so, it sounds like the Michael Bro oeuvre is pretty vast and pretty diverse, but of course we are discussing 868 Hack, so I think we need to get into the hacking mindset. I went ahead and took the liberty of generating from my brain space and with the help of the internet some hacker names for all of us. So if I may, really quickly, I'm of course Andrew Harshman, aka Trojan Harsh. Then we have Scott Berger, aka Burgermeister Boot Record. And with us is Colin Smith, aka DDoS Smith, aka the Smithsonian
DDoS Smith.
DDoS Smith. And for Will Wright, also known on the internet as Will I Am.
Okay.
Perfect.
There we go. Perfect.
Yeah. And so I think like people that are right. Anyway,
but that one was no good. Sorry, I thought that was going to get a pop because, of course, Will.i.am is the name of a musical artist. We all
well,
know.
What the,
so anyway, sorry.
Well, I knew this. Will probably didn't though.
Yeah. Scott Berger.
Will. Will. Dot was.
There. Okay, very good.
I go by the hacker alias Neo. Right. You see,
Burgermeister Boot Record. Sorry. Please. please proceed.
You know, unironically, there is an EDM chiptune artist called Master Boot Record who is
coming to town soon.
Send me some. We'll discuss this more offline, or we'll
Excellent.
just make this whole episode about Master Boot Record EDM chiptunes. Anyway, yeah, I think people clicking in on this episode know what 868 Hack is, and they are familiar with sort of all these other games, which and like is weird because like 868 Hack has kind of like languished in obscurity for some reason. It's very popular with people familiar with his work, and yet on Apple, a whopping 59 total ratings since it launched. Steam, this is like, I think, quantifiably the most obscure game that we've covered on the Steam catalog.
Wow.
I think I did a little bit of wizard math to get us a number for Azure Dreams because I don't have the exact sales numbers. But for Steam, this is the number 2,558th most popular rogue game, whatever game on Steam, with a whopping 122 total reviews. To put that in perspective, some of his other rogue games, Imbroglio has 109 reviews on iOS and Syncopaus, which many people tout as like some of his best work, 84 reviews on iOS. So if anyone is listening to this podcast and is saying like, oh no, they're getting it wrong on X, Y, and Z, please link us to your iOS review because let's see what you have to say on it. So your average player of 868 Hack has about 5 hours of gameplay in it. It's a pretty short game. But Colin, what is the one sentence spear phishing network intrusion attempt that describes what one does in 868 Hack?
Move face, slurp data, get points, don't die to virus.
That sounds about right. I'm looking through our skipping ahead a little bit of the show to just sort of get a preview of our made up rating numbers that we slap on things, whose line is it anyway
Wow,
style.
this is
And
so early in the show, my word.
well, this is I always have to do that in order to say like, well, do I put the preamble on there of all devs go to heaven and it's okay to like or slash dislike a game? I don't think we'll come down quite that negative on it, but I have a backstop just in case. So, anyway, I think, yeah, this is for people that kind of follow the podcast episode to episode. This is another sort of classic Grog Pod whiplash where we go from like something that's in this one zone, and then we next episode is something completely different. And I think this kind of fits the whiplash going from our very successful, very popular solo dev effort of Megabonk last episode to 868, which our most obscure, at least on Steam, game, even though Azure Dreams is probably still number one. But I think this kind of highlights this sort of snapshot in time of what like indie, let's say like mobile indie game development was in 2012. Like we're back in the era of Steam Greenlight. I guess itch.io was still a
So this
thing.
was iOS first
iOS first, yes. And then 3 years
for
later,
like a while then.
yes, at least 3 years. And then it was ported out to Steam
I'm
afterwards.
sad it never got ported to Android. It seems very surprising to me that it never got ported to Android. 'Cause like so I play this part of the reason we're playing this in the first place is too is because it is a shorter game. It is a little bit more portable. I was able to play it on my laptop on a plane. But it seems like it would have been extremely easy to play on a phone.
Yes.
Like there's not really buttons. And also like even the port to the PC itself feels like it's coming from a touch first type of environment. So
Yeah, I actually bought this game twice because I bought it on Steam where everyone was siphoning my family share from it. But I was also I rebought it on the iOS store because I have an iPhone, I have a tablet, and I was like, okay, I know this is like originally developed for mobile. How different is it? It's not really that much different, but it does have that tactical or like that tactile movement to it where you can just like swipe anywhere on the screen to go up, down, left, and right to do your actions and pressing and holding things instead of right clicking. So like I feel like because I've spent so much time playing it on the Steam Deck specifically that it feels right for that. It plays well on the PC, but you can tell, well, I don't know, like it plays well on iOS devices. On the iPhone it gets a little cramped like when you're like pressing down the button to like see the tooltip stuff of like what is this thing? Like half of your finger's blocking it. So I think that like for the era of 14 years ago for iOS games when People were still like, this is back in like way back in the era of like FTL Spelunky Dungeons of Dreadmore type zone. People were still kind of figuring out what this new part of the genre was at the time. So yeah, I kind of can't fault it for that. But I think the PC style of interface certainly seems very good. And if nothing else, like the Steam release has given us this absolutely hilarious Steam trailer to the game that
Yeah,
Andrew's very excited
this
to.
trailer's great. Good stuff. Well done, Mr. Bro.
You have this very unhinged looking homeless man running around, like using his iPad to hack into cars and 3D print purses instead of stealing them off the street
An
and
unhinged homeless man? I mean, not to
Whoa.
belittle or
Unhoused
besmirch
individual.
the unhoused persons, but surely that is our solo dev.
It
Surely that
is,
is
yes.
Michael
That is
Bro.
Michael Bro running around. I want his t-shirt so bad that's just like the protagonist of the game, pixelated smiley face. There's got to be.
Aren't you just the happy smiley face man, like in your like icons now, the central face for dwarves and various roguelikes?
I
The
suppose that's
smiley
true. That
face.
the logo of the website or the podcast is like the IBM Unicode smiley face thing. Although, like, I'm trying to do a revamp of that for the big episode 100 drop, and I can't find a font that's like that same pixel stack. Anyway, yeah, like great protagonist, great Steam trailer. Michael's running around hacking into stuff. It just has like this very unhinged, like grungy Matrix style vibe to it of like exposed circuit boards and you're hacking into the mainframe and in a very cartoony fashion. But yeah, like I think this game kind of sets the tone initially with like the tutorial that you're dumped into right when you start, where I feel like more games need to start up with a 90s modem boot sequence sound effect, but you have like some very Matrixy style ass, like pixelated text that comes up saying like dialing 000-868-hack, a game by Michael Bro and some words by Leon Arnott. It's some cyber techno babble of future cores networked, cooling vats operating at 33 degrees, presumably Fahrenheit, because that seems more appropriate than if it was, I don't know, 33 degrees idle temperature Celsius. The daemon services are active. The virus scanners are disabled. Cryptog security encoded. Glitch processes, blah, 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 blah. All systems ready. It's 86 minutes after midnight in Zaga City. It says initiating tutorial sequence. I'm getting hacked here. And this is kind of, I think, where it shows that like the game is pretty obviously made for a touch interface first, where it says use arrows to move, but it has like a little digital hand on there.
Yeah, and it doesn't it have a like press and hold to like touch and hold to show the tooltip? There's not quite the
Indeed,
right
which
word for if you're playing
yeah,
on
it
a
says hold for description at one point, and I could see how that
yeah.
would be a little misleading, where it's like, well, hold what? Like that's where it's giving you the tooltip to say, like, hey, like if you press space, that's how you use data siphons to like get abilities or progs as they're known in this game. But it just says hold for description. You're like, what? Do I hold down space? But I guess like, you figure it out fairly quickly. Oh, right click, got it.
Oh, right click, of course. I just like ran. I don't know how I stumbled onto that. I guess you do have a cursor in this version,
Yeah, I mean,
so
I feel like
that
that was
led
just
me.
like push the buttons. How many things could you have? You're like, let's just push every button that like makes sense until I
Yeah, how
forget it,
many could
whatever it
possibly
is.
be, on
Like
keyboard?
hold space, hold left click, hold right click. But you're
Indeed.
too.
Other than that, pretty good tutorial.
Yeah, like it kind of like segments off the play space so that you're not like overwhelmed with stuff. It has like these this oh.
I will say there is one thing that the tutorial misses. that Will informed me of last night.
Oh.
Did you know that if you get more than 10 points in a single level, it heals you?
What? No, I did not know
That's
this.
because you're a low scoring scrub. Wow. Get called out.
Interesting. Interesting. 10 points
Which,
heals. Wow. That's good to know. Well,
I mean,
that's kind
that's
of
like
a.
actually does like make a slight difference in how you might play
That's true.
a
Yeah.
level.
Yeah, if you're in the frowny face mode, which is when you've taken 2 hits of damage and the third is your death, then it'll take you from a frowny face up to neutral, and so that means you can actually get that last 8 point block or whatever you're aiming for.
Yeah, I think like the tutorial here is good because it kind of runs you through all of the major game mechanics, but like what you're saying, there's a lot of layers to the gameplay onion here. So real quick, the tutorial tells you you move towards an enemy to attack it, and you shoot out like this big long laser beam that hits enemies. You collect data siphons, which are other little smiley faces on this 3, 4, 5 by 5 grid that you're running around. And that gives you the ability to press spacebar. And what that does is it allows you to collect either energy or credits from, let's say, the ground as you're running around on this grid. Each grid space has little dollar signs or fancy S-looking galaxy swirls on it that correspond to two different energy currencies. And then you got squares that have your abilities that you can choose to grab if you want, but the caveat is that's going to alert enemies, and the better abilities are going to alert more enemies. So you run around, you activate this thing. Oh no, a bunch of monsters have popped up. But luckily, you can actually just use this ability, and then kablammo, they're all taken care of. Other blocks that you might encounter have they alert enemies, but they have points in bright pink, and that's kind of the objective of the game here is to get those points and get out, and you enter the port. And it kicks you out to a run of the game, or I guess the main menu if you've already done a run here. But yeah, like I think Andrew, to your point when you're mentioning in the Discord earlier today, like it doesn't really underscore that.
The look, let me try to get out ahead of this. Every game, 90% of the games we cover have, especially Survivor likes, have a scoreboard, have a leaderboard, which I have conditioned myself over the last like 10 years to completely ignore. Because there ain't no way I'm touching those top spots. So yeah, like sure there's a score screen. But who cares? I'm playing roguelites. A victory is a victory is a victory. So, like, I went into this game not realizing that, oh no, this is actually like kind of an old school arcade style experience where points are the objective. Who cares if you are successful, if your run is a win, if you survive? It's actually the points you're after. I'm not so sure if the tutorial does a great job of communicating that. It might have, and I was just so hung up on the fact that I didn't understand how to press and hold and like read things. Like the first time I played the tutorial, it's like, all right, now press this number for a D bomb. What the hell is that? I don't even like I was having to like infer like what was happening. Like I was having to interpret, like, okay, I pressed that button, the D bomb, and that blew things up. Now, I mean, the tutorial does tell you that, like, oh well, that's D stands for Damon. I guess I could put that together eventually.
Let
But
me. Well,
yes, please.
I've heard it twice now, and it's a demon, AE.
Apologies, Demon,
It's
of
not. It's
course.
not. I always thought it was Damon, because it's
It's
AE,
spelled
right?
differently, but it sounds the same, which is
Is
ridiculous
it?
because a Daemon, the daemon, as you were saying, that's like a benevolent spirit, and that's also the term used for the little critters that shapeshift in the Philip or
Subtle
the Dark
knife.
Materials series. And then demon, obviously evil entity. So that's just a, as a Demon, that is. And so that's just a
I guess
clarification.
technically in the IT world, they are known as like gateway demons, but they're spelled AE. So I
Well,
guess that, yeah, I don't know.
regardless, the tutorial's pretty good, except for two clearing issues for my money. Now, after I started playing the game, I got a pretty good handle on it, and I'm very impressed how from the intro screen to the tutorial to the actual gameplay, very cohesive art style. This is supposed to look like a retro futuristic hacking interface. Lots of nice, vibrant matrix greens and little glowing effects, which are just achieved by Well, of course, you have a gradient of different green pixels, and that's highlighted with some nice purple and blue, and it really gets you in the mindset of being an elite hacker in a like alternate future of some kind.
It's like cartoon hacking, where like, you know, or like what was that '90s, the '90s cartoon TV show Reboot? It feels maybe like a little like half that and half the Matrix in some sense. You know, two things that are very basically the exact same.
Basically the exact same. But all this to say, I guess you are in the story of this game, the numbers, the points.
There's
that's
no
like
story
valuable
to this game.
Data that you're trying to get, I guess.
There is
so,
no story to this game.
I played this game for 12 hours before you guys start comparing high scores, and I'm like, what is that? What do you mean? What do you mean high scores? I'm up to 3 successful runs. What do you mean high scores? Oh, the points actually are the main goal.
I mean, they can be. I feel like you're playing it in a less fun way if you don't.
I'm certainly playing it in
scores,
an easier way.
But like, it's perfectly valid to, like, there's no congratulations, you beat the game seven, or you beat 7 runs in a row, therefore you
hypothetically, imagine if we were talking about any other game. Imagine if we were talking about any other game we reviewed. That's like, well, Andrew, I mean, you trying to get to the end of Hades. I mean, I guess that's a valid way to play the game. It's probably less fun, but anyway, this is a very different gaming experience.
Well, it'd be like if you were
to,
saying the only valid way to play Hades is to see how many runs in a row you can win.
It's not a perfect comparison. Sure.
I mean, it sounds like you want to play soccer, but the main goal is just to kick the ball back and forth and never score any goals. That's more like how I'm imagining it.
All right.
I think the version of the game that I was the best at, which was, of course,
no, obviously
top score over multiple runs is the most interesting.
Yeah, and I think like where this game really shines is like playing this game solo in a vacuum is like, it's fine, you know, like you could probably
in airplane
play this
mode
game
on a
and
plane.
Well, like you could yeah, like you were opening up your laptop and, you know, hacking the in-flight Wi-Fi, people might raise some eyebrows, but yeah, maybe if you're on the plane, don't shout, "Yeah, I got the D bomb and I'm activating it."
I'm going to siphon your energy.
But I think having a either like a group of people to play against for some sort of high score, because like all the leaderboards are like so hilariously like out of reach of like, yeah, there's no way I'm gonna score like 868 points in a run or whatever, but like I thought I was the top dog for the longest time. Like, oh, I've got 43 points. There's no way anyone's going to touch me. And then Will comes zooming out of nowhere with like 49. And then Colin just comes flying back from vacation. And then I think hacking leaderboards and uploading his score of 96 points in 4 runs. And my head, my wig kind of blew off. But like it feels like that's where a good part of fun comes from, is getting that kind of score comparison value. Because otherwise, like, you know, you go through one of the game, you're dumped out to the main menu. And like Andrew's talking about, you have like, you know, this kind of list of previous runs that you've done, and kind of like not really a whole lot of it is explained very well. But, you know, you have something that says like, you know, hacker, kid, agent, cyborg or whatever. And those are the starting classes that you started your run with. And then it'll be go in descending order of how many points you had on for each of those runs. So you have kind of like a local leaderboard. You can see like, oh, what level, like out of the 8 stages available for that run did I complete? And then like sort of leftover resources of like, well, how many siphons did I leave on the table? How many credits or energy or how many progs did I have at the time? And crucially, you can kind of like right click on those to see what your exact loadout was. And then it'll tell you in the last column, like, oh, like, Is that hacker still alive? Is it out there in the ecosystem, or did it get claimed by a virus? And so it's kind of fun to see that, like, you know, for any, oh, so you got like 2 different scoring systems as well. Like you got your overall high scores, and then you have streak scores, which is kind of a different way to play. So like you can get like as many points as you can within just the 8 levels of a run, or you could say, all right, I've got 10 points. I'm feeling good about this. I don't want to like risk them too much. Let's just roll over through level 8. That'll end this run here. Then you continue that run. That's really your only option. And that'll start run number two. And you'll kind of go through the same sequence that I guess we'll talk more about in depth here in a minute. And let's say you get another 10 points there. All right, I'm up to 20 points. Feeling good. Met the final level. All right, let's get out of here with those siphoned points that I've escaped the mainframe with. All right, stage three, a power up. Oh yeah, I'm gonna be unstoppable now. Wait, power ups for ... the enemy? What? So there's this kind of like built-in backstop mechanism to say like, well, instead of, the Andrew method of like, I'm just gonna get 1 point for an 8-level run, and I'm just gonna do that for 95 runs, and that's how I'm gonna outscore Colin in the end. I'm gonna play it super safe, super low risk. Nope. Those mainframes, they're learning. It's a learning computer, as they say. And the enemies eventually will get various power-ups over time, which will kind of help to put a stop to your efforts with things like which are interesting and terrifying at the same time, where you'll get things like Cryptog teleports, where the Cryptogs, the enemies that start invisible but are only revealed if they're in the same room or column over you, can now teleport. You can get things like demon resistance, where instead of the base level 3 hit points, they now have 5 hit points. Or you can get things like glitch wrap, where the little pink guys that will like walk through walls and things can now walk through like the edges of the play space and come up from behind
They
you.
get Pac-Man powers?
They get Pac-Man powers.
My God.
There's things like, yeah, like your attack shooting in the opposite direction from what it normally would be, and then like viruses moving 3 spaces instead of just 2, which I've not encountered yet, but I can only imagine it is pants-shootingly terrifying. But yeah,
Good God.
as
Yeah, no, I did experience the Pac-Man power. That was it I think is a good example of how, with a relatively limited rule set, this game does a whole lot and provides quite a bit of variety, a surprising amount of variety for just a, 5x5 game.
Yeah, there's a lot packed into a small package here, and I think the developer Michael Breaux was saying that like, well, this is kind of a or like these style of games that he's made are kind of a response to at the time like the bigger traditional roguelike games like even just regular old Rogue or NetHack or those types of things have like an 80 by 20 sort of like tile space that you can play in. And his thought was like, well, you never really need a bigger board than 9x9, which is used for Go. So, like let's try to like pack as many of those mechanics as we can into that play space.
So that was one of my thoughts about playing this was like, what if this was just way bigger? How would that change the game? Like, what if it was instead of 5x5, what if it was 25x25? Like, I think it would
Well,
be.
it's pretty clear that all with that amount of distance, all the viruses that move faster than everything else would just like you'd have a wave of all of that stuff attacking you first, and
Well, it'll
then
be spawning in random spots, so.
right. But those ones on average would reach you faster, and so you'd have like that wave would always be the first thing that happens. And I don't know. It seems
Well,
like
it'd be a fundamentally different game.
yeah. I think Colin, I think your answer is Cogmind.
Yes, you're right. It'd be Cogmind.
Whoa.
Superior game. Yeah. I honestly, so this game feels to me, I put it in the same category as I put like FreeCell, or I guess kind of Slice and Dice too, where it's very small, self-contained. My biggest frustration with this game is that it isn't on Android because that feels like it could be an excellent like downtime phone game. I don't have an Android, or I have an Android, not an iPhone, so I'm not going to play it on my phone, and I'm not going to bring my laptop to the dentist. So, like that does limit my ability to play this as a 5-minute game, which it absolutely can be very easily. Less than that. I mean, how long does a single level take? You could easily do it in under a minute. You could finish this whole thing in under 10 minutes, like without, maybe not easily, but like without a crazy amount of effort. So, but like it's a nice small compact package. And we've been talking a lot about the theme. I honestly think that you could reskin this as anything, and it would be like it could be a Candy Crush, it could be Plants vs. Zombies, it could be entirely abstract, and I don't think that it would really fundamentally change how the game is played. Like I don't think that I think the theme is fun, but I don't know if it informs your gameplay decisions in any way.
Well, the only other game like this from Michael's collection that I played, being Cinco Pouse, is a wildly different theme, plays wildly different, and I don't know if the other ones do. I've just got, like, gone based on descriptions that like each one of these style of games is like crazy different than the last. Where Cinco Pouse is all in either Portuguese or German, so there's no English like deliberately so, because it's like, what if you were playing a game that like you didn't understand the native language to? And
What if you're Portuguese?
well, yeah, that was the other thing, was like, oh, I wonder if Andrew plays this game in German mode. It's just like, oh yeah, this is no problem. What's the deal here? I don't understand. But yeah, like sussing out the game mechanics with that is kind of like the mystery to it, of like, how does this thing work, and like all the interlocking systems. So there are like wildly different versions of it. But I do think that, like, yeah, like this is certainly a smaller scope game, kind of like our Hoplite episode that we did, very puzzly,
Yeah,
very like.
Hoplite is a yeah, another probably more relevant and more recent example.
Because, yeah, like I was scrolling through the list of other games that we've done that are this small, and Andrew was unfortunately not on the panel at the time when we covered Luck Be a Landlord. But I feel like that's also similarly small scoped, but lots of interesting emergent gameplay coming out of it. Because, like, otherwise, you know, like some of the games that we've covered have just like massive scope, like Caves of Cut or Pokemon Mystery Dungeon. But this is like definitely something smaller, something more compact. That, yeah, like the times that I was just kind of standing in line at Trader Joe's, I'm like, yeah, okay, I could like do a level of 868 here. Worked out pretty well. And I think that, like, yeah, being on the Steam Deck suits it very well, versus like, oh, I gotta go trudge over to the computer to play 5 minutes of it.
There is essentially no meta progression. I mean, there is the tiniest amount of like in terms of you're slowly unlocking the various skills or progressions or progs or whatever you're calling them. Progs is probably programs, not progressions,
Yes, I yeah, that would make more
but
sense.
other than that, like those are just I'm assuming just there to give you something to look forward to, but also just to keep it a little bit less overwhelming right at the beginning. But there is no Hades style like big meta progression system. There's no Caves of Cud level and map and all that stuff. So I mean, it's a much more self-contained, tiny experience, which I appreciated.
Yeah, I
And
mean, there's
it seems
only
like maybe not all of our podcasters appreciated it in the same way.
hated it.
Oh, I don't know. I like a good chess puzzle, but a chess puzzle is one that you have to actually sit and consider all the possibilities before making like three, four, five moves. This one is the possibility the possibility space is so uninteresting, I think. That's my main complaint here, is that like the most interesting, or I don't even know if I want to call this annoying actually, is that the random spawns of everything just kind of randomly spawns, and that is essentially a huge part of your likelihood of progressing. Whereas in chess, you don't have to work, there's no random, obviously there's not any random spawns, and so you can actually work through the problem. This one's just like, okay, well I'm gonna make a move here, and there's a, you know, there's 20 spot, or there's like, we'll say like 10 available spots above me and like 10 below me for them to spawn, and if they happen to be above, then I'm fine because I have like a little like a tunnel I can go back into, but if they spawn down here, then I'm toast. And so that kind of thing is fundamentally unfun in my opinion. It's just like, oh, I got screwed by some RNG. It's like, okay. So this game is not really one of true skill. It's a game of, well, if you do it enough times, if you play this game enough times, eventually you'll get a lucky spree that makes it so you get a very high score. Or in Colin's case, you get super lucky. I want to say on the first run or the fifth run or whatever. But it just seems like in playing, because I played this game more way more than I thought I would, like 5 hours, and that was mainly just to beat Scott, which I, you know, quite thankful. I mean, the competitive nature in me is the only thing that really made this happen at all. But I just, it's They're
See,
not
I
very
need to just
interesting
lie and
decisions.
tell you that I had like 5 more points than you, just to string you along a little bit further.
Well, so Will, I don't necessarily disagree with your assessment of the game, but this concept of like getting a lucky run is, I think, something that is present in a lot of modern roguelite games, where it's like you are trying to get that first victory, that first successful run under your belt, and your skill level isn't quite there. Your meta progression isn't quite there to get you to that victory screen, but then you get a lucky drop. You get a piece of loot that's perfect. You get a lucky synergy of a couple of different perks. I'm thinking about Enter the Gungeon. I'm thinking about Dead Cells. And then it's up to the player to like take advantage of that RNG
Well,
luck.
we have to translate this into Will's terms. So imagine Slay the Spire 2, you get like a really good card early on, and then a relic that synergizes with it. There you go. Now continue, Andrew.
Yeah, so like imagine you're not as good at Slay the Spire as you are now. but there's I don't know, this is at least I don't know if this is an experience shared by my co-host, but for example, when I was playing Enter the Gungeon for the first time, I'd get these runs where I was close to getting to the very end, I was close to beating it, and there were those exciting moments where I would get, there would be that cross section of my skill level was increasing, and also my RNG was good enough that like I had a shot at getting my first victory screen. Obviously this game is very different than traditional, pardon me, than modern roguelite games. I if I was playing on your level, Will, I guess I would have more of an appreciation for this specific RNG issue that exists in this specific game. I'm not good enough at this game to be bothered by such things.
Well, and I think that there's like interesting elements that you have with the tools at your disposal that can deal with some of that stuff. 'Cause yeah, like it does feel bad, like you spawn like on a level and like, oh my God, there's like a million dudes. But like the spawn rate increases linearly with the number of levels that you're on. So for example, like sector 1 out of 8, one enemy spawns. And one enemy will spawn every 12 actions that you take. So either like siphoning something, moving, or shooting, or whatever. And that number decreases the further you get. So if you're on the final sector, any like 5 things that you do, another enemy's coming in. But like sector 2 will spawn 2 enemies, sector 3 will spawn 3, 4, 5, and 6, et cetera, all the way up to like the final level, like 8 dudes are spawning all at the same time. And in some cases, you can kind of use this to your advantage, where if you know that, like, okay, I know that, like, the entire map is going to be filled with dudes, and I'm going to be surrounded and killed in 2 seconds, but I know that I have the step prog that allows me to take one step freely. I know it costs, like, it only takes 3 energies to use. So if I just bank up a bunch of those, I could just, like, go in on, like, level 7, like, grab all the point blocks. And go into level 8, everything is covered with enemies. But I can just go step, 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 step before they've done anything and escape with all those delicious points from the mainframe. Oh, yeah.
From the mainframe, indeed, those elusive points, which I should have known about and would have improved my experience. I mean, I had a fair amount of fun playing this game, despite that. Yeah, Scott, the different progs, the different programs, which in a different game would maybe be called like perks or powers,
Skills.
skills, are distinct and interesting. And once you learn what they are and you start a run, you can kind of put together a strategy in your brain. What other standout progs are there?
Which one
I'm
is the
fond of the
best?
warping
Well,
prog
so
rather.
for example, yeah, warp is real good, where like you will randomly, like your happy smiley face player icon will like randomly like attack and complete like
You will
nuke in,
telefrag a random
yeah.
enemy, which is great because like you're backed into a corner. Oh no, you're surrounded. You're going to take damage unless, haha, nothing personal, kid.
Yeah, and crucially, like there's another like really smart meta strategy that you can do where like, let's say you're on a level and there's one enemy remaining or something, but there's like, and they're not a virus, so they're just moving one tile per whatever.
You like kind of bait their movements to be on a certain part of the map. You escape to like the next level. That enemy stays on that spot from where they were on the previous level. And if the other enemies are still spawning in, you could say, all right, if I have the warp power, I could just warp right to where that enemy is. And if that's like super close to the exit, boom, you've just solved that level without getting surrounded. No problem. There are
Well,
other
except for
ones.
those other enemies are still going to be on the next level then. So then now you have
Well, what
14.
if you
Well, that's
step to
next
the
level
exit?
person's problem. Yeah. There are things
Oh,
that like you can do like push or pull to like the descriptions for these are very in theme for the
would
game.
pole be good ever?
Yes, 'cause like if for example, like let's say you have a whole bunch of demons on the map, like the 3 hit point super tanks. And what you do is you could pull them towards you. That will cause them to overlap on a block. And then let's say you have the debug
Oh,
prong.
I see.
Terminate overlapping. Bam! They're like six of them are dead immediately.
If they're next
And
to you and you pull them into you, do they hurt you?
that's a great question. I was never
I
brave
did
enough
this
to
many
try that.
times, actually. They do not hurt
It
you until
shouldn't,
you take an action. So
right?
if you have
Okay.
like if you pull five guys into your location though and you move away, then you'll get hit five times from.
Yeah, we
So
don't
what you
want
need to
that.
do is you pull them in, and if you have step, then you take a step and then you take an action, so there's still one behind. And so both can be
Or
used
you
to
could,
like.
or you debug them, and so there's five of them on top of each other, and
Oh
they
yeah,
explode and
you
debug. Or if
is
you
it
crash, you can use that to kill
right,
everything.
there we go.
Step and weight are like, I feel like the unsung heroes of like the thing is exactly one square wrong, and you need them to be either one closer or one further away.
Yeah, to borrow another chess analogy, this is a very Zugzwang or Zugzwang type game where like you'll be cornered and you'll be like, well, I don't like it normally in games like Caves of Cut or whatever, you just press the five button to just wait in place. But no, you need an ability to do that, and you're just like, well, fuck, I don't have that ability, and now I'm dead.
I kind of
But
think this game would be better if you always had the wait ability, and you could just, I mean, and it cost you one energy to do it.
But it was just like inherently native to do
It's
in
like you
first
could
place.
always use one energy to wait,
Or maybe it
but
costs a data siphon,
so that way it's
what?
actually very expensive.
What?
If it costs the data siphon, the thing you use to
Oh, I
shoot.
mean, I guess that is kind of a wait. Data siphon is a wait. Because
Yeah,
it
I
does
mean,
spend one turn without you moving.
there's also
So
the
true.
undo button as well, which versus the wait description where it says increment time step, undo says decrement time step, which I think is very,
I
very
mean,
funny.
so undo is just basically you undo your move, right?
Yes, and that
Is
has gotten me
it?
out of a jam many times where I've like.
But it gets you out of a jam, but only if you. It doesn't actually. It only helps you if you did something unwise.
Which for me is very often.
But like it's the optimal way to play would still just be to not make the wrong move,
Yeah,
which made
good
it
to know.
so
Thank you for that insightful
no,
advice.
but which meant me which wouldn't I couldn't ever take that because it would be like, well, no, you should just play better
I get what you're saying. It's
and get
like, should
that.
I spend resources to get this
Well,
thing that
I
will
feel
allow
like
me to spend more resources if I play like a bozo?
it,
Sorry.
yeah. Well, and it was like, oh, cool, I've backed myself into a corner. Now I can use all of my resources to get it so that I'm backed into a corner 3 turns from now.
Sure,
Because I
sure,
still
sure.
didn't actually get far enough out to like unfuck myself.
Well, that being said, there's a wide variety of ways to play this game. So, with your undoing stuff or you're warping around, or if, like me, you're obsessed with the attack plus prog, which makes it so that your
So
base
expensive,
damage
though.
is doubled. It's so expensive, but y'all listen up. You know a
I
power
won't
up.
listen.
Yeah, I'm talking to the audience. You know a power up is sick. You know the developer. Mr. Bro, he knew what he was doing when he designed this thing. Like this power up, you activate it, your power level increases, your damage increases, your little smiley face suddenly has a little like mirage, a little sort of glowing pulsating outline around him. And not only that, the music changes. There's a music change. That's how powerful this power up is.
Oh,
I know
yeah.
it's overpriced. I
I
know
forgot
it
this game has music.
activates like so many, it spawns so many enemies on the screen, but golly, is it satisfying to use, which is very impressive, given how, again, simplistic the graphics are in this game. Yes, there is music in this game. What do we think of the sound of this game? I found some of the sound effects to be a little grating, a little annoying, but eventually, I was, I don't know, I got ear blind to those.
I played on mute on a plane, so if I was playing it on non-mute on a plane without headphones, how mad would my seat, the people sitting near me, how mad would they have been?
I think people would be confused. They'd be like, what is that? It's like, like are a lot of the sound of it. Like people would think, is there a problem with my seat? Is there an issue with my, you know, my little, is
Would
my
they have thought
phone
that I
picked
was
up?
hacking the plane?
Right. Yeah, probably.
If I was ever
No, this
brave
is a real
enough.
question. Does it sound like
Oh,
hacking?
well, yes, because I imagine that anytime that I'm like hacking the IRS dbase or something, that anytime that I'm doing that, all the key presses that I'm making are like the exact sounds that I would make with my mouth put through some sort of digital filter. Yeah, I think like the background music, as it were, is more just kind of like there was one, I think a Steam review that I was like glancing through that was like saying that it sounds like you're being digested by a computer, which I'm just like, yep, that sounds right, and I love it. Some of the sound effects, I think if I was like solo devving my own game and I was like, well, like it's 2012, there aren't really like sound effect libraries on Fiverr that I can go and get. I guess I'll just make all the sound effects myself, going like pew, pew, and that's about the extent that I would do them. And I think they work well here because it's like a little unsettling at first, but like, yeah, I kind of went ear blind to it. Now I find a little like kind of charming, actually.
Oh yeah, no, on the whole, I like it.
It reminds me of Dwarf Fortress in the intro when like at the very end of it is like that.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly. And
I do
that's
love that the Dwarf Fortress intro is so good. Like it's better than it has any right to be.
Stay tuned for later this season when we're
As for
looking
the
at that.
music, it's like an ambient track that's not like it's not very I don't know, pronounced or noticeable. Like I there's no way I could like hum the melody.
Yeah, it's like very like if you set your synthesizer to grunge mode and we're just kind of like leaning on like multiple keys like very slowly back and forth, like it has kind of like a hypnotic quality to it. It's very good
Ooh,
like
good way to put it.
background thinky noise without being too overbearing. I think it works very well here. And the upcoming sequel 868 Back real quick has a playable demo on Steam right now that you can go and play. And the music for that is kicking, I will say. If you're into
Ooh.
like techno drum and bass music, it
Okay.
has, yeah, it's got like a good sick theme to it that I'll probably play this episode out with it because I was originally like,
Huh.
all right, I'm gonna mentally
Sure.
coin flip between that and like the actual background music for this game. But oh man, like yeah, the if you're into like that kind of
Which you should
lo-fi.
be.
Yeah, I think you would like that music a
And you
lot.
know what else is kicking? The visuals. I'm really liking the look of 868 back. It's like if you HD remastered and did a good job of the 868 hack graphics. Like everything
Yeah.
is very recognizable, but with a lot more detail. But still the aesthetic, the style is intact.
It's weird seeing it feels like when you're playing a game in 30 frames per second for so long, you kind of go blind to it. And then when you play that same game in 60 frames per second, you're like, whoa, this is like maybe too much detail. But in a good way, I feel like, I don't know. Yeah, I'm super excited for that. I think that sequel is going to be real good. And crucially, I think like maybe not to jump ahead in my notes too much, but like, so the sequel 868 Back, Michael Breaux finally has a publisher that he's working with called Finji
Ooh.
Games, who have published other games such as I don't know if anyone's heard of Chicory, A Colorful Tale, but they have also published Colin, you've probably heard, played Tunic somewhat, if I remember
Scott,
right.
you have so much faith in our ability to know these
Colin, you've
games.
played
Talk them
Tunic.
out.
What about Jerkin? What about Pirate Shirt?
Or I was a teenage exo-colonist. But yeah, I think like this is sort of the thing that when esoteric solo developers kind of like build out like their own game world that's like, oh, this is a game that's like for this person by this person. And when they finally have a publisher to kind of crack the whip a little bit of like, look, your ideas are great, but Like, if you were just to tweak a couple things here, it could sell, like, or let me rephrase, not sell, but it would be much more broadly appealing, let's say. And that's like what happened with Caves of Cud and Dwarf Fortress when they partnered with Kit Fox. And I'm just like, oh man, like, you know, finally, if Michael's games like get signed on with Finji, like maybe we'll get those other games of his, like maybe in like a re-release fashion. I like just playing around with the new 868 back version on demo on Steam. I can just see that, like, yeah, like all of the kind of things that we're barking about of like, well, yeah, like, you know, it was a port from a mobile game. You can kind of tell he's taken sort of all that feedback into account of like, yeah, like when you hover over something, it tells you what it is, in a more kind of obvious 2026 game design fashion. Yeah, that's it's super fun. I like a lot of the
Yeah.
ideas that are going in it.
That is an interesting game development situation, a conundrum of sorts. Like, how does a publisher work with a unique artist with a unique vision and not compromise that vision while trying to make the game maybe not the most commonplace played popular game in the world, but a game that more people, more accessible game, I suppose.
I don't know. I think that's like not impossible to do. Like,
Oh, sure. Well, clearly it's been done,
here you
but
go.
it's
Here's a
just.
little bit more resources. Here's a little bit more like help. Like, even if you're not like, I mean, Dwarf Fortress is the best example of like, hey, we could do the graphics for you because obviously you don't give a shit about that.
Oh, there you have it. And if only we had more publishers like that.
Yeah.
Less publishers getting in and messing up these games.
Yeah, I mean, most I feel like if you're starting off as a solo dev, it's got to be at least a little bit of a labor of love. You're not doing it just for like, oh, I mean it just to make money on my weird hack smiley face game. Like, if
They
it
made
happens, it
enough money to
happens.
make a t-shirt, so that's good.
Well,
We love to
that's
see that.
yeah. I mean, off Just Us, he probably made enough money, so
I didn't pay
figure
for it.
my word.
In true hacker fashion.
What critically, I have a question for the panel. Does this game make you feel like a masterful, powerful, smart, tactical hacker? Do you
No.
feel
I would say yes, but
negative?
I'm curious.
Negative.
Wow, okay. What about you, Andrew? Are you in the yes or no camp?
I mean, when something went according to plan, when I dominated a sector, it felt pretty good. Definitely.
I'm not saying it didn't make me feel good at game, but it did not make me feel I did not
You weren't
intrinsically feel like
immersed.
I was I did not feel like I was hacking anything.
Even on a plane, even on a laptop.
Even
All
on a
right.
plane. I mean, I feel like Will did say not in the podcast at some point that it feels kind of like a hacking, it's like a mini game in a different game, which that would act it would actually make me feel more like a hacker if I was playing another game and then I played this game within
You're playing
inside of it.
Fallout, you're trying to open the
Yeah.
terminal, and then you do this mini game in order to get inside. You have
Yes,
to get
that would
above,
make me
like
feel more like a
above or
hacker.
beyond like level 5 or something, or like
Sure,
get a
sure.
score of 10 or
So
something. Yeah.
is there a reason why that applies here, but not to Luck Be a Landlord?
I mean, luckily be a landlord, I don't feel like a hacker either.
Yeah, now that one's much longer though, in terms of the number of there's much longer. There is a lot more synergizing that actually happens. Like this game, there's no like the extremely limited synergies, and that's like one of my biggest gripes about it. Luck Be a Landlord is synergy rich, and it's just like there's synergies popping out of every single feature in that. This is like, oh, I guess I can like see them while they're spawning in, and then blow them up while they're spawning in for slightly more damage. Like there's not really a lot of synergies happening between these. And I think you guys tried to point out like, oh, well, you can do this and that, but it's just like they're loose synergies at best. You get like a point, a plus 0.2 modifier on get these
Sure.
things together versus like the Luck Be a Landlord where it's exponential.
I mean, I don't need to have synergies in order to enjoy a game. It's not
Well,
a
that's.
prerequisite. Like, I've played many games where there's not a first-person shooter, there's not a synergy between hand and gun. I can still have fun
But
doing
there's
it.
a synergy between having a long distance weapon and then being in a place where you have a long distance sight vision, or that kind of.
Yeah, there's a synergy between having a thing that lets you step faster and getting into a corner in a hole and letting them like come to you. Like there's some amounts of synergy in the game. It's just not like that's not the point of the game. It is a small aspect of it. I mean, I enjoyed this game. When I was, did it make you feel like a hacker? It's like that specifically. No, I don't. You guys seem very enthralled with the theme. I do not. I did not find the theme to be very impactful to my enjoyment of the gameplay. It was just kind of there as well.
I completely agree. I mean, it just felt like this could have been a weekend with anything, like you said earlier. Like it
I
could have
could have
been
played this as a Candy Crush game and I would have had just as much fun, which was
exactly.
for me, yes, fun, and for Will, no fun. So.
I mean, it'd been cool if there was like actual like so if you're hacking in, like maybe build on that a little bit. Like, what are we hacking into? Give me a little bit of background, and then maybe when you actually do hack something, like the result is
No,
like you're
don't
getting
want. No hack.
maybe the meta progression between is like, okay, so you
Oh,
just hacked a
damn.
bunch of PII, all right, something terrible to do, and then you have the option. You can sell that PII to this other nefarious organization, or you can, I don't know, do
All
X,
right,
Y, and Z with it.
I've got the solution to Will's quandary here, which I'm like I can see both sides between Colin like now just keep it like a simple puzzle game and Will wanting like no give me some more substance. I can see both sides to it. And from Will's side, there's a game called Black Ice, which is like it's almost like 868, but a first person shooter in like a laser tag arena. And the idea like so the concept is like this like laser tag arena looking
Just play some Ultra
place.
Netrunner.
Netrunner. It does feel very Netrunner because you're like when you're in this kind of aggro crag environment, it's like you're in the net. And when you like quote do your siphoning of Prog's equivalent, you're hacking the ice, but you're given a goal. Like well, why are you doing this? Well, because your daughter is sick and the capitalist corporate overlords are driving your cancer payments up, so you're just gonna like go in and steal all the money from the corpos. Like that's the kind of like broad overarching like point of the game. And when you do so, when you hack a thing, it spawns like enemies and you're shooting at them and it's much more synergy driven. So I can see how like the scope for that would work in that kind of realm. And maybe something like 868 hack or back could exist as like this interesting mini game within that broader framework. I could see both sides of it. I think like this just on its own as its own independent entity still certainly works though.
Yeah.
For sure, for sure. It's an interesting game to review because it's like it is extremely unique in how it was developed and how it was conceptualized. This is like a almost like a this is a indie game in the most it's a very indie game. From that era that we discussed earlier, where indie games were still pretty
Well,
artsy, still pretty fartsy. This is an art
I
exhibition of
mean,
sorts.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia and it started off as a 7-day roguelike, which honestly, that's not surprising to me at all. It feels like a nice, small, self-contained game. And I think, like, I know that I personally am ranking it as a not as a game. Like, if I could only take one game to the desert island, it would not be this game. But that's not. That doesn't mean it can't be fun for the 5-ish hours that I've played it.
But we established early on that the competitive element is important. So what if there were three other desert islands that were all connected with some kind of, oh, I don't know, coconut-based
Well, then I would
land
obviously
connection?
bring then we'd be playing squad.
Over the coconut network. Excellent.
And the
That's
over
performance
the
gameplay
coco
would be
net.
just as good. You wouldn't even
The
notice it.
cocoa net. Yep. Got it.
Was I the only one that played the Plan B DLC for 868?
No, actually, so when I started out this game, somehow I clicked on that and I only played that for the first like hour,
Well,
which
yeah.
Which was very confusing.
Yeah, you were
I was
playing
like,
on
I
hard
don't know
mode right
what is
out the gate.
happening. Yeah, I lost a lot. I was very confused. I was like, man, they really don't explain any of this. I was like, I just genuinely didn't understand what was happening much of the time. Which, I mean, mild complaint. I don't know how that happened. Oh, I probably just clicked something wrong, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like in the main menu thing, it's like it kind of gives you like a little like left right arrow selector. So I could see
I think
from a
I must have just.
UI, yeah, if you were like, oh, next, I want to do what the next thing is, right? Oh no, I'm sucked into the, I've been hacked.
I don't even think I think it I think I like clicked the right arrow and it moved to the next one and I didn't notice that it had happened.
Yeah, you were definitely hacked by a
I was
cyborg.
hacked, yeah.
So the Plan B DLC, just to kind of explain a little bit, like we were talking how in the normal version of the game, you get to run number three, and the enemies have now started to power up. Well, strap your socks on because Plan B, you start up your first run with that, the enemies are already powered up, and the UI goes blue as it does. Like it does when you get a power up right out the gate. But the balancing mechanism is that you can actually pick what sort of starting class you want to be. So you can say like, well, all right, based on the layout here and the enemy power up that's going on, like, do I want that extra starting siphon? Do I want the 10 credits? Do I want the 10 energy? Or do I want the extra prog? So it kind of gives you some flexibility there. There's nine new ones. Some of which actually use siphons as the currency to activate it, which is interesting. So for example, normally when you use your siphon, it just goes in a up, down, left, right, like plus pattern, but you can get the X hack, which uses a siphon as a currency, but that rotates it from a plus to an X style. Or like another one is dot quit, which just terminates the session. So if you're in like level five, and you're like, God, I've got a lot of points, but I don't want to risk this. You can just hit that, and then that'll end the run. Like, you don't have to get through stage eight as a result. There's some other ones like making adjacent enemies fight each other, or what's another one in here? You can lower alert levels, all that kind of stuff. So it I think puts more focus on like the run, like point
Yeah.
accumulation, as opposed to like the individual, like within like one single run, how many points can you get? It's much more of like, okay, you're expected to do many more runs and kind of balance out that initial RNG.
I think if you had played a lot of this of the classic game, I think Plan B is like the logical progression of like I want to experience the weirder later part of the runs without having to go through three runs to get there. It's like, yeah, just you've added more complexity right off the bat. You're not doing the boring early levels, which I mean, not that they're like particularly boring, but yeah, you could just you're in the weird immediately, which I probably would have appreciated it more if I had started playing the regular game and then found my way to Plan B, but did give me a firm grounding once I finally got to the real game.
Well, I know that I have a whole bunch of other data or bullet points in my doc here about what does it mean to be successful as an artist, and the ruins of capitalism and Eric Dolphy jazz albums, but I don't know how much more deep we want to get onto that
Well, we can talk
before
about Eric
possibly.
Dolphy for a while. I mean, if you want
I think it
to.
might be time for ratings, my friends.
Well, okay, all right. Unironically, I do have a bullet point in here about so there's kind of this back and forth about like, well, like if this game had such a big impact at the time, and like going back, like a lot of his games from like 2013 to like 2017 were like nominated for like Indie Game Fest awards for like novelty or like excellence in design. Like A6Eight was nominated for the 2014 IGF Excellence in Design Award, only losing out to Papers, Please, which, you know,
Oh
hey,
wow.
no slouch there,
Yeah.
but like just to like go up against that, I think kind of exemplifies that kind of popularity there, or at least that kind of like critical acclaim. But
I'm reading. I'm still on the Wikipedia article. Apparently, it was 868 Hack was ranked number 42 on Polygon's 100 Best Games of the Decade, which
I
is
have that also.
surprisingly high for a
Well,
game that has like
It's technically all of Michael Burrow's games, but they put 8-6-8 as just like if there had to be one game that sort of exemplified it.
Yeah, even
So
so.
it's more of like a career achievement award. But yeah, like ahead of Superhot and like just behind NBA 2K12. Like that same article has well, I don't know if this will taint your thoughts on it, but Spelunky was number three on that list.
I mean, I didn't like Spelunky, but I understand why people like Spelunky.
Yeah. And Minecraft was number one, so I
I
guess
mean, okay,
that's
well,
well
that's
deserved.
objectively probably true.
Yeah, but I think there's this push and pull that like I think there's people, maybe myself included to some degree, that are like, well, if this game was like so well nominated by like indie game awards and stuff, like shouldn't it be more popular? And so I think like where I'm going with this is like back to that Eric Dolphy thing was like I was trying to like scour the internet for like, okay, jazz, like we had been using jazz, weird, you know, random jazz music as intro because the roguelike genre is effectively just jazz of the RPG genre. So Eric Dolphy, I think, kind of fell into that same symptom of like weird and experimental, wasn't really a commercial success at his during his time, but had this like weirdly like broad impact on the greater universe around him. Does that track at all, Will, with what you know about Eric Dolphy? Is Eric Dolphy just like the Michael
Who is
Breaux
Eric
of jazz?
Dolphy?
Eric Dol so he, the what I know him best for is his album Out to Lunch, and in particular there's a track called Hat and Beard, which I believe was what was it in like 9/8 or no, it was a 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 8 and 9 and yeah, so it was his 9/8 and it was just a really just a it's how do I describe it? I mean, it's a bebop, but it's a hard bop, and so it's a very off the wall and cymbals clashing and just it just oh it's just like it's creating a I'm gonna start talking about Jack. I see myself going
I'm
down. I'm gonna
listening to it
stop
right
now.
now, and it's certainly something.
Oh yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. If you haven't listened to that album, especially that track, please do that. So Scott, to your point though, I has
I'm
I mean
sorry,
he's
I'm listening to this. It's just like man tries to make the sound of like a seal on the beach with a saxophone.
I mean, he's cr it, you're
He's
creating
pushing the
the musical.
boundaries.
Yeah,
He's
you're creating a
expanding the
niche.
genre.
Right, right, right.
The itchiness. He creates the itch and then he scratches it for you. And so it's like it's a beautiful thing.
Sure.
But with relation to the to roguelikes and this game in particular, I don't know if I would consider them the same sort of direction here because this is actually just like a branch of jazz, whereas I don't know that, and I don't know a lot about like since that like how did that cascade through all of jazz and all the artists. I'm not much of a jazz historian, so I can't. It's hard for me to speak to that. But I don't know what's the impact that this game and this sort of thing has made on other developers. I can't say that I know that either. So I don't have a very strong opinion here. It feels like this game is so obscure and it didn't really push the envelope in any interesting. No offense, but no interesting ways. It's a standard sort of really simple puzzle game. I don't
Yeah,
know.
and what's weird is that like for how lauded the other Michael Breaux games are, I feel like okay, well certainly like we should have had that Vampire Survivors moment of like, you know, oh now we have like 10,000 bro like games, and there are like game jams that try to make games in this style. There are certainly like I think itch.io has its own bro like genre tag to it or something, but like yeah, it's weird that I feel like the cap for this style of game in terms of popularity is something like Pondbarian, where it's another kind of like chess, much more emphasis on the chess, but like small grid tactical style stuff that like doesn't really overstay its welcome. It's not trying to do too, you know, it's not like going Caves of Cud deep in terms of its systems, but like
I
that's
mean
the
the
only.
other well or what's the FTL developers they made the robot game
Into the Breach is what you're thinking of.
yeah I mean I feel like Into the Breach is also a similar to kind of game it's except it's got more progression it's the puzzle like where you've got some like tacticsy things it's not actually that similar but it's the same kind of like small grid do some things.
Well, you know what sets that one apart, though? Because I mean, it has a similarity of having enemies spawn like seemingly randomly, and like there is a bit of randomness involved in like how the map is procedurally generated. But the key difference for me and what makes that game especially interesting is that your dudes are multiple, and so you can like you move them all during your turn, and so you have like multiple. The decision space is much broader because you're not just going up, down, left, right, or space. That's five, literally five things you can do, and only five things you can do
That's not true.
in an 8-6-8. Whereas that's not true. Did you say that's not
I
true?
mean, there's
Well,
each of the skill things is a thing that you
yeah,
can
you could have
do.
like 10 other abilities that you could leverage, but
Okay,
Yeah, all
I'm
right.
not
All right.
agreeing. If
Yes.
we had
Continue.
three
Continue.
smiley
Different
faces.
units in different positions, and they all have their own like specialty. And so your job then is to like try and build interesting combinations of moves across your entire turn. And so I don't know, that to me is a much more interesting and fun experience. Sure, yeah. And like that's, obviously a more, I guess, in-depth synergistic design system. Who doesn't like big robots punching bugs? But yeah, like I could totally see 868 having some sort of impact on the design scope of that. It's interesting that yeah, like we don't have more Into the Breach likes, as it were. I mean, I played that Master of Peace demo at PAX last year, and I like that was really impressive. But yeah, I think in terms of like why this specific game is not as popular, I don't know. Maybe we'll see like with 868 back once it finally gets some publisher attention and people can
Gets
kind of,
the Kit Fox
yeah.
glow up.
Maybe Michael just needs someone to be like a full-time marketer of his games, because I think
Yeah.
as we know, solo dev plus marketing equals a
Sad
nightmare.
dev.
Yeah,
Yeah, but
so much
is
fun.
Steam trailer's great.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
If we get another completely unhinged Steam trailer out of it, it'll all be worth it.
Absolutely.
All right, any other details that we want to touch on before I launch a very quick potentially new 2-minute segment on everybody?
Ooh, I'm excited.
All
Let's have
right.
it.
Okay, so I'll include this in the rating section, and we don't want to overstay our welcome too long on here, but I think there's been the last thing on earth that I look at is YouTube comments, but every so often one of them will have maybe a point about like, well, like, how much did you guys like actually critically examine this game? And I think we've done a pretty fair job so far, but just to call out for any new listeners that like the average of all of our average scores on this podcast is like a 6.7, which is not to say that like a 6.7 is bad. That's just what the average of our average numbers is. And so like if we give something that's like lower than that, like I don't know, I feel like there's some aspect of the internet that's just like, you're shitting on my favorite hobby, how dare you? So I've compiled a list of questions that anytime that like, if we have something that like falls below that system, like maybe I'll open up the floor and we don't have to spend too much time on it, but I'll pick one out of these series of questions for us just to kind of play devil's advocate, as it were. And so for this one, I'll just, I don't know, randomly pick one out of the hat, and pick this one. So before we actually slap some fake made up ratings numbers on this thing that will piss everybody off eternally for no reason. Question to the panel, what would a person who gave this a 10 out of 10 say we've gotten wrong with our analysis so far?
We haven't mentioned much about how really like elegant and consistent, internally consistent this game is. Like it is, it's very like predictable. There are rules, and those rules, like a classic roguelike game, you are beholden to as well. If you're on top of a cube and you hit
No,
debug,
I'm gonna be with Will here, and the
you're
answer is
erasing
that this
yourself.
isn't a 10 out of 10 game. I'm sorry.
Well,
I like
no.
this
That's
game, and
not the
it's not.
question. That's
To
not the
Andrew's point,
question.
though, like all games have rules, though. There's nothing that you just said there that makes that like a definition of a 10 out of 10.
But
It's
if you had to put yourself
very,
in the
I
shoe,
think it's very elegant.
if you put yourself in the
Elegant. That's
shoes of someone
elegant.
who is a big fan of the game, like what could you see from their perspective that would make this like, oh, this game is just like the tops.
I'm really struggling. I mean, maybe brain damage. Maybe wish we need more brain damage in order to get there, because or maybe
Really enjoy colors, like the contrast colors, just triggers a deep neurological reaction in them. I
I
mean,
think
I
the
like this game. I don't think that this is. I could see this for some other games that I gave a slightly higher score, or actually even gives us I gave a lower score. I don't think there's enough here to boost this particular game up to a 10 out of 10.
Oh, maybe if you've never played any game before, and you're stuck on a desert island, and this is like you either have this or you have watching some crabs. I might watch some crabs though. I mean, the crabs are kind of
If
interesting.
you have 10 games and you have to give a score to each one of them,
Oh yeah, I
one through
guess yeah. If
10.
you only had like Game Boy games prior to Pokemon, and or this game, you might be like, oh well, this is obviously like, because if you introduced this back in like 1994. Because this is very possible back in 1994. This may at that time have been considered a 10 out of 10 game. That is how you do it. You go back in time to before we had good games.
All right. Well, we've solved it. Time travel. All right. Actual made-up ranking numbers that don't apply to anything because they're all made up, just like Who's Line It Anyway? Andrew, kick us off.
Yes. Well, famously, I was hoodwinked by my co-host into using the wrong scoring system. So
You were
my score might
hacked.
seem especially low. But really, you know, when it comes to game, the field of game reviewing, of game criticism, the actual number doesn't matter so much. It's more about listening to a reviewer, getting a sense of what they like, hearing them talk about a game, and then, you know, comparing that what the reviewer likes to what you as a gamer like. And
Sometimes a bad review is the best review for you.
So this game's gonna get. What's it gonna get? Well, before I get the actual number, I like this portrayal of hacking. I think there's like, in terms of like fictional hacking, there's bad fictional hacking, and then there's like fun stylized fictional hacking. So, for example, in Die Hard, Live Free or Die Hard, this is what, number 4 or 5 in the series. Anyway, it
Is
features
that
a
the
lot
one
of
with
hacking.
Justin Long in it?
Yes, exactly. There are so much goofy Hollywood, you know, UI made up technobabble. And the worst part of it for me, the worst detail in the film, was there's a sequence where one of the evil lady hackers, she like rolls up to this facility. They break in, they storm the place, and she rolls out a keyboard. She pulls out her keyboard to do some portable hacking. She rolls out a rubber keyboard. Now, I used one of these rubber keyboards back in the day at a Radio Shack, and it was the most god-awful typing experience I've ever had. The idea that someone would use that to do anything serious, insane. And of course, you know, it was just chosen because you know, a set dresser thought it looked neat. Anyway, then there's the fun type of fake hacking, which is like the film Hackers. Ever heard of it? Absolute cult classic for a reason. 868 Hack falls into that fun hacker category, and I truly do think it's a efficiently it's an efficient, simple, elegant game. From a game design perspective, there's a lot to admire about it, and I had a lot of fun when I wasn't trying to maximize my points and just trying to survive. 868 Hack comes in my stack rank right behind Barony, right ahead of Spelunky. And it scores 5.74 Andrew points.
Will.
No, it's gonna be a 6 for me, dog. It's just the decisions based, like I said, it's not super interesting. And the more I thought about it, it's like everything moves at once. You move once and everything else moves at once, versus you move once and one of the enemies moves once. I mean, just to draw the comparison to chess again. If you know, I don't know, it feels like the simplicity of they're all just moving at you. And you have to like figure out what corridor they're going down, what path they're gonna take. Like, that's just not a fun mental calculation. Cause they're, and it is, by the way, like the D bomb or the what is it, the pink dudes, are those glitches? I forgot the names of these things. But like, they have a specific pattern. Like, if you're like moving towards a corner and you don't want to get caught into the corner, they have a specific sort of pattern they take. And I'm not sure if the other ones do. I never actually paid that close of an attention, because you can avoid taking a hit of damage if you like calculate exactly, like if you know what path they're going to take. But the point I'm trying to make here is that those were not interesting decisions, or those are not interesting observations. The game's too simple. The graphics are almost non-existent, and as we know with Into the Breach, as we've discussed, versus Into the Breach versus Cogmind, the big di like, if you put Into the Breach graphics into Cogmind, Cogmind becomes a good game. This game is maybe it could actually become a mediocre game if only they had this sort of Into the Breach style graphics and maybe a little bit of a story. Maybe there's a little bit of a meta progression. This hard roguelike game. There's no such thing as a good hard roguelike game, in my opinion. They're so simple. They're so dumb. I just can't get them. It's a 6 out of 10. I mean, that's at my barely recommend. That's if like you'll have nothing else to play. Maybe you do this, especially if you have people to compete with where you want to beat them. Like that's the my competitive nature, as I said earlier, that's really what made this. It's the only reason I opened up again. As I told Scott, he threw the gauntlet down by posting his score, and I'm like, I can't be having that. No. So that's really what compelled me. But there you go.
Colin.
All right. I'm giving it a 7.5 Colin points, because for each giving their own style as kind of points. But yeah, like I found it to be an enjoyable, fun, small game. I put it in the same category as the Free Cells, Hack and Slice and Dice, and it's a phone game. It's not on my phone, which is my biggest complaint with it. But like, I thought it was an enjoyable 5-ish hours. It passed the time extremely well on a plane, where I'm like not re I really don't want to like get deeply invested in a game. I'm like cramped in there. Like, I'm not gonna be playing a first person shooter. I'm not gonna be playing Enter the Gungeon. But yeah, I thought it was a interesting puzzle. I didn't I don't care at all about the hacking theme of it. I did not find it to be relevant to the actual gameplay. I think you could play it with just red squares. You could play it with like literally like random checker pieces and chess pieces that you grabbed from you could physically play this game on a board in your home with like someone running the AI, basically as a solitaire game. And that's kind of how I'm viewing it, how I'm rating it. I think it was a good, fun solitaire game for a little bit of downtime. If you want to play a real hacking game, I'm going to preempt Scott a little bit. The best hacking game is Exapunks, the Zachtronics game. That actually feels like you're doing hacking, and you do need to like know how to program a little bit in order to play any of those games, which is why I didn't get so far into it, because I don't know how to code well enough to beat that game. So that's my review and my recommendation. So, Scott, I'll leave it to you.
All right, well, I will round us out by giving 868 Hack an 8.068 56527. Just behind Halls of Torment for me, and just ahead of Jupiter Hell on my rankings. I think this game is neat. Like, when I first saw footage of it, I was kind of unimpressed, where I'm just like, yeah, people talk a big game about it, but like, I don't understand what the real draw is, until I actually started playing with it. And then I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I think I'm getting the hang of this. And then once I'm in level 8 and I've got like 40 points banked, and I'm like, okay, I got to get to the exit in order to get to the next run here. Like, I was like sweating bullets, and I'm like, okay, I could see now this is where people get that sense of hacking in that sense of almost like a heist game, and not like, hacking in with like terminal command codes sort of thing. But like, I've got my big garbage bag full of points. I'm about to just like escape out into the net. And I think it did that very good. The mobile versions, iOS, iPad, they were fine. Like, it certainly played about as well as I expected it to there. But yeah, I think like on the Steam release, just like there's just that tiny little bit of jankiness that, like, for a game that is, what is it, like, I think a whopping 6 megabytes, 6.2 megabytes, I think that, like, this game does quite a lot with it. And if the little bit of jankiness there is like the biggest criticism that I have, I think overall it's quite solid. Like it was very fun to battle everyone for leaderboard positions. I think that the times where I was like in a very tactical situation, I'm like, okay, how can I use these tools that I have available to escape and get those points out of here? I thought it worked really well. I think like the overall like prog design is very thoughtful. The stuff that it's expanded upon with the Plan B DLC, I think also works very well. And the 868 back, I'm super pumped for. So go and play the demo for that. That overall is going to put 868 Hack at our new number 54 game, just behind Cult of the Lamb, and I think appropriately just ahead of Hoplite, which feels like a good, like we got a good like pocket of mobile-ish games there between like 868, Hoplite, and then Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Blue Rescue Team right after that. Like games that all like somehow have all clustered next to each other of like things that you would play for like, I don't know, 20 minutes at a time and have a decently good fun time with. So number 54 out of 93 games, we're closing in on that episode 100, coming in soon here. But yeah, similar games. There's, you know, some like I initially this was a real small list, but it's expanded. Where I guess, yeah, we were talking about Into the Breach, Hoplite, previous episodes. Cinco Paus, Imbroglio, and Zaga 33 are I think the most closely similar from Michael's other games. But coming up, yeah, we got Pondbarian, Morph Blade by the dev who did Heat Signature. Feels very similar in kind of small scope, but like very puzzly. There was one that I was playing recently that we got a gift key from, thank you. That's net.crawl, which has, I think, what Will's kind of looking for like more kind of spiffier graphics, more kind of like, it's almost like, what if this game was like a deck builder in a way? And there's much more of kind of like positional hex grid style movement on there. There's some bro likes that were developed by Zunil, Zunil dot itch.io, Amalgamate and Magpie, which people like. But there's a whole tag on itch.io for bro-like games. Black Ice that I mentioned before, I think that supports up to 16 player like LAN co-op or something crazy. First person shooter version of 868 Hack that I can already tell Andrew is Googling frantically. There's a game called Dungeon Death Ball that I like a lot, which is very small, but like very small, kind of puzzly, good charm to it with you're throwing rugby balls and getting touchdowns. Master of Peace I played a little bit of at PAX West, and like Colin was saying, Exapunks if you want to get that Zachtronics itch going. But yeah, check out that stuff. I've been putting all these into the YouTube description for the episode as well if people want to find actual links to these things. If there's a coherent way that I can actually put it in the podcast description, I'm currently researching that. But in the meantime, you can find so that's, yeah, that's similar games, but there's also similar pods. I'll point out here, similar podcasts that the formerly Eggplant, now Secret Lives of Games podcast has been doing a Michael Bro game once a month deep dive. So if you want more info on 868 and Zaga 33 and Cinco Paus, if they don't do that whole episode in Portuguese, we'll be very disappointed. But check that out if you are craving for some bro discussion. You got it all there. But in the meantime, grogpodzone@gmail.com. Tell us why we're still getting it wrong with all of our critiques. Grogpod@gamedev.place. I've been putting some more micro reviews up there in grogpod.zone. Has everything in one stop. But as we stop this recording here for 868 Hack, you know, we've talked a lot about a small scope game, but what if for our next episode we didn't play just one, we didn't play just two, we didn't play 50? That'd be too much. But what if instead we played seven games out of the bum, UFO 50 collection? So as we're dot hacking the mainframe out of here, it's time to climb up some fun rogue style games that I promise they're all not made by Derek Yu. I know we kind of came down hard on our Spelunky episode, but We are talking Bug Hunter. We're talking Velgras, Planet Zoldath, Waldorf's Journey, Party House, Overbold, Campanella 2. It's going to be a fun time. Yeah, I'm super excited. I've beaten most of those games or gotten so close to beating them and then dying within like the last possible second in classic Scott fashion. But yeah, it's going to be a hoot. So to play us out from this episode, instead of some grungy digestion music that would normally play for the end of the episode from 868 Hack, we're going to hit some drum and bass beats to hype up for the upcoming 868 Back. We're back to hack.